the ricochet effect, ricochet effect. Greetings, I'm Dr. Obini El-Amin, and I'm with
Terry Dumford,
and we are your co-hosts for The Ricochet Effect.
It's the ricochet effect, ricochet effect, ricochet effect, ricochet effect.
Greetings, I am Dr. Obini El-Amin, one of your podcast hosts for The Ricochet Effect, and I am so excited because we are in studio with Mr. Gio Gibson of OMAC. You guys may have heard of Operation Making a Change. Its mission statement is to pave the way for success one child at a time by empowering them to build for a better and brighter tomorrow. Just a little bit about the program. OMAC is a program created and designed by Mr. Gio Gibson, and the organization provides mentorship, coaching, and support to teens and adults to enhance their self-awareness skills in order to break the cycle of problem behavior and make a sustainable behavior change. The program also seeks to enhance respect, discipline, and accountability. And if I could even add to that, because this man is a master at building community. Gio, welcome. Well, how are you?
Well, good afternoon, Doc. How are you?
I have no complaints. You're in studio with me, so it's all good.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and jump right in here. Can you share a bit about your background and what led you to OMAC?
I can. First of all, I just want to thank God for this opportunity. Everything I do is God-driven. What led me to the work in the community was my own upbringing. I grew up in the Illinois area, in the Wisconsin area. I grew up in Waukegan, Illinois. That is north of Chicago. The reason why I mention Chicago is because most people haven't heard of Waukegan, Illinois. So if you travel right outside of Chicago, that's where we are located. I grew up with two brothers and two sisters. Mom and dad were divorced when I was 3 years old. So my mom did get into another relationship, had three more kids, two sisters and a brother. So we all lived in, a two-bedroom apartment. You know, mom was on, Social Security. You know, we got the food stamps. Grew up in that government cheese era in the 70s. So I was born in 71. So I got a... I saw a lot of, then I call it poverty, but now that I'm mature, the man that I am, poverty is really having nothing. And what I realized that we did have access to those government resources. So we got the WIC, the food stamps, although we had to go stand in long lines and stuff like that.
And you had each other.
Yeah. And that's number one. We did have each other, and very dysfunctional though, growing up in a home with, my stepfather, my mom, and, siblings. It was very challenging. I saw a lot of violence, a lot of substance use, drug abuse and stuff like that. And so I had a front row seat of all of that. The relationships that my mom had with my stepfather, it was unhealthy. It was very unhealthy. So, watching that for about 11 years, a lot of domestic violence and just no structure, no real structure. Stepdaddy was tough though. He was tough on us, and although I didn't like his approach, it's a lot of times that I would say a lot of things that I saw happen or he said or did, it made me the man who I am. It helped me become who I am. Now there's a lot of things that I didn't like that bothered me a lot because my mom was involved with that. My mom, comes from a good home, oldest out of about 7 or 8 kids. Grandmother, amazing, grandmother introduced me to God as a kid, stuff like that. Had to go to church.
So, yeah, you had that foundation.
Yeah. At least and back then I didn't know that as long as I had God, I had everything,
There it is.
I didn't know the importance of a relationship spiritually to have with God. Most of the time, my relationship with God was just using the name in vain, trying to get out of stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, it was rough. Like I said, the things that I saw got me involved. I was involved with drugs at a young age myself, curiosity at such a young age. So in between, 8 and 10, I was already experimenting with drugs and stuff like that. You walk outside of our home. It wasn't the best neighborhoods. It was gang-related neighborhoods and stuff like that, high crime, lots of drugs and stuff like that. So once I'm seeing this inside, it's like when I step outside the door, it's like it's a normal.
Yeah,
like,
in so many cases, yeah. You become the product of your environment.
Yeah, so maybe this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. So didn't really understand that at the time. I was definitely trying to find my way. Sports kept me out of a lot of trouble. I flocked to a lot of the neighborhood kids that we all had a lot of similarities. You know, we come from single parenting homes sometimes. We just didn't have, realistic goals, but, we wanted something, but the things that I wanted, was the things that was leading me down the wrong path. So, education wasn't a factor. I don't remember really getting into trouble because I had a bad report card. I went to school to eat. I went to school to because it was safe.
Right.
And I got a chance to be a kid, play
likewise.
On the playground.
Yes.
And that was fun to me. So, but going home on that bus or walked home, it was nerve-wracking for me. Mm. I was always scared sometimes to go home because I didn't know what mood my stepfather was going to be in. Was he going to be violent? Was he going to be nice? We just didn't know. And so, looking back, I realized that, there was some type of issues going on with that. So, but I never really get pressed about my education. I had to go to school because mm-hmm. we had to. So, mm-hmm. but it wasn't my thing that I'm going to use school to further my education or right. never thought about college. And when I did, I thought college was for rich people.
Right.
I grew up around a lot of diverse people, Puerto Rican, Mexican, Caucasian, but predominantly,
mostly
black
African
men and women American. That look like me. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Wow. I mean, though you went through all that, the outcome of that has created who you are today.
Yes.
And has inspired the work that you do. So speaking
yes.
of which, what is the most exciting or rewarding part of the work that you do?
Well, the most exciting is I'm doing what people already planted in me. That, people use God to plant those seeds in me. I was a knucklehead. I didn't want to listen. I wanted to do my own thing. I didn't want to follow the rules. And so, there's people in my life back then that told me that I can be something other than what I was heading to be. So the reward of that right now is just living out what people spoke into existence, mm-hmm. like my grandmother.
Right.
Like Holly. Holly was a lady that popped up at my front door. And I'm like, well, what are you doing here? Who are you? She was looking for me. And you ever seen the movie Freedom Riders?
I've not.
Well, she was one of those type of human beings that really cared about people.
She acknowledged something special
yes.
in you.
And Holly came and just said, hey, the school gave me your information. They're concerned about you. And, this lady was consistent every day of picking us up, taking us to a safe place to play ball, eat food, and study the Bible, which I thought was easy because we had to go to church anyway. When Grandma pulled up, you going to church. Back then, we didn't tell the adults what we're going to do.
I heard that.
It was an order. Let's go.
To this day, I still follow that same philosophy with the kids that I mentor.
So it's very rewarding knowing that I had people in my life, and I didn't really know I had it like that.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know they were really playing a vital role in my life of shaping me of what I was going to become. So I always give it up to the ancestors. I always mm-hmm. give it up to the ones that already paved the way.
Yes.
And made it to where I can be sitting here with you talking about just my contributions to the community as much as I can.
Yeah, they were sowing seeds into you. They were sowing the proverbial prosperity seeds in you that are being that we realize today, right?
Yes.
And so, you talked about your upbringing,
mm-hmm.
and I know that you have, through other conversations I've had with you, you've had many challenges.
Yes.
And how have these challenges allowed you to be the man that you are, and how have you overcome them?
Yeah. These challenges really, really tested me. I've been battle tested. I've been involved with, street organizations. I was in the drug game, also fighting an addiction of drugs. And not only that, I was three times in prison. So, I definitely been battle tested. And so what I'm seeing now within myself is God was always covering me, you know, even when I thought that I couldn't make it this far. Cause a lot of people told me I wasn't going to be, I would be dead before I was 15, 16, 18. You know, I heard a lot of that. But again, you know, no test, no testimony. And so these challenges that I've been facing, although I didn't want to go through it, I mean, there's no regrets. You know, it again, it shaped me to be the man and makes me effective when I'm going into classrooms or prisons and jails and wherever I may go. You know, it gives me that rapport. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he knows what he's talking mm-hmm. about. So, and we all got a story. You know, everybody has a story in this world, but I just chose to use mine to help somebody else and free somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Anytime that I hear a person talk about their spiritual journey and mm-hmm. maybe even their religious journey, and so I'm wondering if your grandmother is she still living?
Unfortunately, no. I miss her. She passed away about 9 years ago. My grandmother, you know, she was tough, but she was the sweetest lady. She was very active in my life. And I remember her telling me, you know, stop going to jail, stop going to prison, leave the drugs alone. You know, you need to get your life together. She was saying that for years, and I started realizing that I'm stressing my mother and my grandmother mm-hmm. out along with my family members, because every time I went to a correctional facility, I was taking them with me. Mm-hmm. You know, they might not have been there physically, but spiritually, they were with me, and, mm-hmm. and that bothered them, and I no longer wanted to be a part of that. And so my grandmother got a chance to see me become the man that I am for at least 10 years
of
my life. So although I miss her, I'm still thankful that she was able to see me become this man. She was so proud of me. When I tell you, my granny lit up every time I called her. Her birthday's February the 15th. I would call her and sing happy birthday every year. And yeah, I'd be like, happy birthday to you. And she'd be like, Gerald. I was like, yeah, yeah, that's me, grandma. I miss
you guys
that.
Have to see this. I wish you could. He's just lighting up like the whole room is just like a glow.
You know, you don't miss nothing until it's gone.
Oh, that's right.
You know, you don't realize what you have in this world until it's gone. That's why, you know, I'm always telling people to value who you got. You know, even if you feel like you ain't got nobody, you got something to work with. Mm-hmm. Value that, because when it's gone, it's gone. You see the changes and the difference
in your life.
Yeah.
And, you know, to that effect, do you see that OMAC is a bit of a ministry for you?
Oh, yeah.
How so?
I would say OMAC is a ministry, because when I was in prison for the last time, mm-hmm. it was my third time in prison. It was 1999, December 31st. I am very clear about dates. And so Y2K was supposed to hit in 2000. And, you know, you should have seen all these men. They were, you know, panicking. And it was like people was writing their last letters, because we thought we was going to be gone, mm-hmm. making phone calls. And I'm watching this, and I remember what my granny and Holly and people that, you know, believed in God would tell me, like, always pray, you know. So I walked into my cell, and I paced. It wasn't too long of a pace, because the cells are small. and I said, you know what, God? I just threw my hands up in the air. And I said, I surrender. Mm. And I didn't know what I was surrendering to. Mm-hmm. All I knew, I was surrendering for real, for real. Mm-hmm. Like, I told God, I said, I don't even know if you hear me, mm-hmm. because I know I ain't no good. Mm. I'm a criminal. I'm a gangster. I'm this, I'm that. But I said, God, if you allow me to live through these 3 years, I promise that I would do whatever it is that you want me to do. Mm. Sure enough. And that's probably one of the realest prayers I ever said in my life, more sincere. Yes. And so, you know, although after that prayer, I went back to playing cards and doing push-ups and playing dominoes, you know, I still had 3 years to get through. I wasn't really thinking about, you know, where can I be in 20 years?
Yeah, what were those 3 years?
Was
that probation?
No, I was in prison. I violated parole.
Yeah, you were saying you needed to get through the 3 years, but after you got over those 3 years, then you were going to be a changed man.
Yeah, and so I, right after that prayer and going back to whatever, I sat there and started planning my future. So I was planning on being here with you today, right? Yes. Years ago, 25 years ago.
Hey.
And so OMAC was created right there in my prison cell on a raggedy piece of paper. If you know, if you've been there in correctional facilities. And so I wrote down OMAC. I was always infatuated by Operation Desert Storm and all that type of stuff. So I realized that I had to become my own doctor without a degree. Now, I'm a high school dropout, but I got my GED in prison. And so I said, I'm going to become a doctor.
Congratulations.
A surgeon.
Yes.
So not a real certified surgeon, but I said, let me start working on me. So the operation is really symbolizes me, a person operating on themselves, removing those things that are hindering us from growing as, you know, good human beings and healthy human beings. And so I realized I had to stop using drugs. I had to stop selling drugs. I had to abide by the law. I had to get away from, you know, the gang life. I had to stop, you know, smoking cigarettes. It was the smallest things that made a big difference in my life. And operation, when you do that, you make changes. So I said, operation, making a change. So listen, I put it under the mattress. I didn't think no more about it. When I came home from prison, I had 3 more years. I did the three, got home in 2003, discharged. I didn't do any parole when I got out, and they tried to let me out early. But I refused it. They tried to let me out a year early. I said, no, I'm going to stay in prison.
You weren't ready.
No, I knew I wasn't. I said, I'm not going home. But people was like, man, you crazy, you stupid. But, you know, that cycle is when you get out of prison, it's like a badge of honor. Everybody glorifies that. You know, you home from prison. It's like your chest is poked out. I was tired of that. You know, you're going to go shopping.
Right.
You're going to go get a meal. You're going to throw your kids up in the air. Then you're right back to the to the streets, right? I said, I'm breaking that cycle.
Yes.
It's going to start with me because that's what starts with self. So when I came home, it took me a couple more years to get my mind right, because I was still in prison, even being home.
Psychologically.
Exactly.
Locked up in the mind.
Yeah.
Shackled.
So I know everything that I'm doing is of God.
Mm.
The judge, I was facing time for child support. I was a teenage father. My first child was born on my birthday, 18th birthday, October 30th, 1989. And that when I was in court facing child support, because I didn't know nothing about it. You know, a lot of men and women aren't educated about child support. And I was $40,000 in the rear. And they told me, like, oh, yeah, you're going to go to jail. So they put the cuffs on me. But the judge was like, wait a minute, take the cuffs off of him. And she looked at me, said, I don't even know why I'm doing this, Mr. Gibson. But before I walked in, I said a prayer.
Mm.
Now, you tell me that this ain't if this ain't God, I don't know what it is. Right.
Right.
And so she gave me 30 days to come back with a job and a payment. I walked out. I had a job interview on that Monday, and I was hired at a school in Racine, Wisconsin, as a lunch monitor. This is what started opening, the ripple effect of that started opening other doors for case management. And I became an activist in Racine, Wisconsin, protesting against the violence and the drugs and the gang activity, you know, trying to get everybody on one accord. So, and that's just what I'm doing here, too. You know,
exactly.
So my footsteps were ordered all along, and this is just where I stand. But, yeah, this is when you're doing good, this is of God.
This is a ministry.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I tell people all the time in empowerment work that you have to start from somewhere.
Yes.
And then you have to be committed. And for every day that you're committed, you build more discipline. That's actually what happens. And then at some point you say, you know what, I got this. And it gives you confidence. And the next thing you know, you start having wins. Mm-hmm. And the next thing you know, you're successful. And the next thing you know, you look behind you and you're like, yes, I journey, but that journey is behind me.
It is, definitely.
Well, so then, you know, we work in UK Prevent together.
Yes.
And so while you work with iChampion Health, Project Ricochet, we work with Empower. And so much of the work that you do around empowerment or substance abuse eradication and really trying to reduce the social the social drivers of health, you know, so we want to reduce these things. And there is inequity in the system. We know this. But how does your work specifically contribute to addressing inequities in health, education, and for violence prevention?
Well, I believe the work that I'm doing addresses inequities is, you know, I'm a convicted felon. Okay. And so I also go into our correctional facilities because I know there's more Gerald Geo Gibsons that exist.
Mm.
Okay. And so we can't keep holding people to the same double standards If they committed a crime 20 years ago, it's like we're still holding people accountable for that. So it's hard for men and women, especially of color, to get a job, you know, especially when you got that felony behind you. And so what I'm doing is I am trying to be the best version of myself so that I can get other people to start taking a look at, like, hey, change is real. Change is real. And no matter what a person has been through, if they have proven themselves, right, then we should start opening up these doors and inviting people to the table. There's so many chairs reserved and tables reserved and empty. It's because we're not letting people in the door. Well, I let people in the door, so I ain't gonna put myself in that part. And of course, you can't let everybody in the door. Of right. course, there are.
They have to prove themselves.
Exactly. So nothing was handed to me mm-hmm. at all. And when people come through me, it's like I'm letting them know, like, you know, I'm more than just a finished product, right? I had to work for this. I grind for this. Like, I got it straight out the mud. I'm one of those, the rolls from concrete type of.
Yeah, but you haven't stopped working either.
Exactly.
Everybody in the community can see how hard you work
yeah.
for the community and as a result of it, working yeah. for yourself. Because it goes both ways. And in fact, I feel like that every single time that I do a community outreach or even doing this podcast, that not only am I uplifting the community, but I'm uplifting myself as part of one in society. And yeah. when we singularly mm-hmm. uplift ourselves, we're all uplifted.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, no, I totally.
Because even in your position, you've raised the bar for somebody. Right. There's some girl out there. Oh, you have. You may not see it, but, you know, and so I want to be the example of change as well. You know, I'm raising a bar.
Yes.
Right. Other than, you know, you don't have to be out in the streets, but I understand why people are out there. See, I understand. You
I
know,
do, too.
Some of that stuff that we see and hear about, you know, somebody's trying to feed their family, and I'm not trying to justify, you know, criminal activity and stuff like that. But there's until we get to the root of what and why, you know what I'm saying, people are doing what they're doing and what's causing these things, which we know the playing field is not fair, especially financially. I mean, we are behind financially hundreds of years as a race. And so these kids and young adults that we see today doing what they're doing, there's a reason for that. There's a ripple effect that took place first that got us where we are. So now what's challenging is they can come to us all day and get a positive message. They can get some motivation. They can get some nourishment, even incentives and stuff like that. But we got to remember, they got to walk out the door and go back home. They got to go back to an environment, and they probably don't have like somebody like you or somebody like me to keep uplifting them 24/7. Sometimes, 24/7. Don't you wish we can adopt all the, have a big old crib and just invite
yes,
and
absolutely.
Adopt everybody? But unfortunately.
And that crib
yeah.
in Fayette County is Fayette County. And
yeah.
so we've got to be about that in terms of everybody in the government and our institutions and our community-based organizations and our faith-based institutions and anybody who wants a better society for our now and our future. We
yes.
have to be about that house,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion. I think that, you know, as they say, do not litter, because who's coming behind you?
Yeah.
It should not be for somebody else to pick up your trash. No, we've got to, you know, create, grow, plant seeds, you
yeah.
know.
And everybody's got to lay a brick. Everybody's
mm-hmm.
got to do their part.
That's right.
You know, they say if you keep laying bricks, you're going to end up building a house or something,
mm-hmm.
something with a strong foundation, though.
So we're doing it.
Yes.
We're
Amen.
Definitely doing it. You know, so I was raised in the community that OMAC sits in. And so thank you for the work that you do to
thank
elevate
you very much.
The space. I think that even by you being there, the community in a way is even cleaner. Because
mm-hmm.
If you've never been to the OMAC office, it's like noteworthy. But it's just a very beautiful space, and GO has just created this environment of just true community
Thank you.
And love. And so, you know, having said that and having talked about community, so what role do community partnerships play in helping OMAC to achieve its mission?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a firm believer of making sure, you know, we all do this together some way, somehow. We're stronger together. And so community partners play a major role in shaping what OMAC is. You know, without the community, we have nothing. Let's go there, because the community, we always engage in the community, but we're asking them, like, what do you need? Because sometimes we can just go to a community and dump stuff off and they don't need that. Or, you know, you assume that somebody needs this, and but that's not the need. The need is someone needs to listen first. Let's listen.
Right.
And see what are the demands, what are the requests and stuff like that. So our partners, you know, whether it's financially contributions, you know, prayer, or just being there to volunteer, that right there helps, I think, any organization continue to shape and grow, because we need each other.
We do. Mm-hmm. And so in the instance of Project Ricochet, we have a three-pronged mission, and that is our Titan Financial Legacy Thrust, our PR Health, our Project Ricochet Health, and then also our BWOW, our Business Without Walls Academy, which houses our Urban Art Collective, which facilitates our World Art Camp. And so, you know, when we look at that circular logo, mm-hmm. that logo means so much to us, because, you know, even when you see that Project Ricochet and the bridge and the reality of, if you're trying to get someplace, you're going to have to start somewhere. And then what we look at with the three-prong approach is that it's going to take all that mind, body, and soul. But most importantly, in a society such as ours, it's going to take resources.
Yes.
And if you don't have those resources, then you're likely not going to be successful. And we, too, we have been able to elevate simply because of our partners, not because of, interestingly mm-hmm. enough, the money, though that is important yeah. anytime you're trying to support your staff and certainly to execute programs. But it's been because of the groundswell of community here in Fayette County and in Central Kentucky. And I can even go so far as to say across the state, because we have an initiative in Jefferson County now, and in Louisville with Roots 101 African American Museum and our partnership. And it has been really wonderful to be back in the state of Kentucky. I've only been back here for 3 years. Mm. And in coming back, I almost feel like that I have accomplished more in these 3 years than I've accomplished in 20 years
yeah.
outside of the state of Kentucky. I always say that Kentucky is a jewel. And it's a hidden jewel in the United States. I probably shouldn't put this out there, but it is. It's just been massive in terms of, if you want to do good, you can do good. There are no excuses.
Right.
So what advice would you give to individuals or organizations looking to make a meaningful impact in their communities?
Well, if you're going to ask for advice, make sure you utilize the advice. You know, at 53 years old, I'm still learning. I still ask questions. There's always room for improvement. But execute your plan. You know, I hear a lot of people talk about what they want to do, but there's no action behind that. You know, you don't need permission to do a good deed. You know, I didn't ask for permission to do a good deed or wake up one day and say, you know, I just want to be better with the world. I chose that. And what I did was, OMAC didn't become a program until I came to Kentucky. You know, I came here when I started back in Wisconsin, in the Kenosha and Racine area. I had to get side by side with people.
Mm-hmm.
I had to help other people's vision, right? And
mm-hmm.
so I can learn. God was pouring so much in me. I even went to Houston, Texas for a season.
Mm.
I went back to Illinois to help my childhood friend. When I was in Racine, I got with a pastor, Pastor Ford. I mean, he, you know, spiritually just helped me with my spiritual stamina, you know, in many ways. So just getting yourself lined up. Everybody can't start at the top. You know what I'm saying? Like, this, everything starts from somewhere. So get with an organization if you don't really know. That doesn't take your dream away. That, like I said, I got side by side. When I came here, I was with other people. I went into the schools with the people that were already doing the work here in Lexington in the schools, with some good gentlemen that's dedicated to this work, and they know who they are. I worked with them. And so it wasn't until maybe 2012, somewhere around there, maybe 13-ish, that's when I said, okay, well, God said it was time. And so that's when OMAC became about, you know, because it was always a vision.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I believe OMAC was one of the first or turning into incarceration programs here in Lexington, in Kentucky. So You know, we're working with tons of kids. We're working with kids in the system. Mm-hmm. Schools, you ain't even got to be in no trouble. You know, we serve as a prevention. But again, you know, if to all the listeners out there, come up with a plan, strategic. You know, write it down and get with some people. I ain't going to say the right people because in all reality, you know, ain't none of us really right. Some way, somehow, you know, when it comes to the heart, you know, and the Bible speaks about that. But that's what I did. Don't be afraid to partner with other people that don't look like you.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? Because God, you don't know who's God sending you.
Mm-hmm.
It's right in your face. You never know. And we need to band together and stop criticizing each other for certain things that, you know, I chose this route. You know, I went the community route. That led to county attorney route. That led to DJJ. That led to DYS. That led to law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
But somebody's got to do it.
Yes.
Because change happens within a system.
Right.
So we got to get a part of the system, be a part of it.
That's
so
right.
We can be the change.
That's right. I really applaud you for that. And of course, you know how I feel about us being stronger together.
Mm-hmm.
And even in this journey, in my life journey, as well as the journey for Project Ricochet, is we are working arms locked together with other organizations, the government, the school systems, anybody who wants to work with us.
Yes.
Our arms are open. Our doors are open. Our minds are open. Our hearts are open. That has been honestly the best elevating aspect of Project Ricochet and why we have a level of sustainability here in Kentucky. When we started this initiative, there were some closed doors.
Oh, yeah.
And we very quickly as a team came together and said, you know what? We're going to work with the people that want to work with us.
That's right.
And then we've kept moving. And because we made that one decision, like you said, choice,
yep.
It has allowed us to just say, you know what? We love you. We're not going to leave you. We'll be here for you and with you whenever you're ready. But we have to keep on going up the hill.
Yes. Yes.
Simple as that.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm really happy with that decision because it means that
favoritism is real. You know, getting into this work, there's something that I realized. Like, I thought the grass was greener on this side. You know, I thought, you know, a man to my caliber, stemming from what I've been through, where I come from, and just want to be a part of, I thought the grass was greener, but unfortunately it's not. You still got to deal with a lot of foolery, lot of, you know, envy, a lot of, you know, just people that just don't want to accept you.
But you don't have to deal with that from anybody at Project Ricochet, because if you ever tell me that you do, they're out.
Right.
we don't do that.
And vice versa. That's how we are at Operation Making a Change. You know, you come through the door. Of course, we definitely going to evaluate. But you know, everybody deserves a chance. You know, if it doesn't work out, it just doesn't work out. That's just how I see it. But most of the time, you know, we've been quite successful with a lot of people, and success to me is just helping the next person become successful.
Right.
That's what it is, you know. Training up our kids to one day take over for us.
There can't be enough Operation Making a Change
in
our world,
right?
Even here in Lexington, somebody said the other day, they were like, "There's only so many resources in the nonprofit space," and I said, "What world are you living in?"
Right.
The concept of resource, you have to look beyond that. Like you said, there's prayer. There's participation.
Yes.
There is whoop whoop. Throw your hands up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, celebrate what we got going on and what we're doing here.
Yeah.
There's also financial resources, but there's partnerships, and you have to look at resourcing and capacity building differently. And so I never think to myself that we don't have enough resources to do what we want to do. It's do you have to be strategic, and do you have to use what you have? Yes, but I came from the community, and so I know what it's like to make a dollar out of 15 cents, even a dollar out of 5 cents.
Right.
So we can stretch, whatever we have and make it work for the many.
That sounds like a lyric right there. Trying to make a dollar out of 15 cents.
Hey.
Not who that was. It come to me.
Yes, and so when we think about opportunities for growth and innovation, in the work that you're doing here in Lexington, but maybe even Central Kentucky, because I have heard that, you know, OMAC is spreading across this region. And so, but then what is your vision for the future in regards to opportunities for growth?
Well, you know, the dream is to have Operation Making a Change outlive me, for sure. Trying to train up our young ones to be enthused about the work. You know, our ancestors passed the baton to us, so we're the new ancestors. I thank Karan Butler for giving me that jewel. But we are the new ancestors, and we gotta continue to train up the next one. So when we're sitting down, you know, we're looking at, you know, the seeds that other people planted, but also what we planted. My goal is to, I would love to take this back home where my village once was, Waukegan, North Chicago, Zion, Chicago, Kenosha, Racine, Milwaukee, Green Bay, even St. Louis, Detroit. I would love to see OMAC spread throughout those cities that I'm familiar with, you know, I have family or have some type of dealings myself in the streets one way or the other. But yeah, just, you know, model this program, you know, travel the world and just influence, you know, people in correctional facilities and law enforcement agencies to take another look at, you know, all the diamonds in the rough in the neighborhoods, in the community, because you need people that's been there and done that to really make a solid impact. So
that's beautiful.
Yeah.
And okay, so we're on an elevator.
Mm-hmm.
And the elevator is on the 80th floor. We're mm-hmm. at the top.
We are.
And we're coming down, though.
High in the sky, though.
Uh-huh. So give me the two-minute spiel for OMAC. And then give me your call to action.
So Operation Making a Change is everybody's program, you know? It's not just, you know, I'm the founder and executive director, but it's for everybody. And Operation Making a Change has proven itself in the community throughout the years. It's been it's been added like a puzzle piece, just playing our role, playing our part. You know, my team member and board members are amazing at what they do. Teamwork definitely makes the dream work. My call to action would be this, you know, we need to get more involved with our community programs. We have so many gems and amazing people. And I just want to see everybody just support. It doesn't even have to be financially, like you said. Just being able to support this program. You know, our website is teamomac.com. We're on Facebook, Operation Making a Change, OMAC team on Instagram. Just go take a look at it. You know, pass it to a family member or a friend or somebody at the school or wherever. We're a nonprofit organization, so we don't charge people for what we do. We may have fundraisers every now and then, but everybody that's come through OMAC, we've treated nobody but correct and just with love and support. So spread the good news. Don't be afraid to share this good news that OMAC is definitely making an impact in the community.
OMAC is making a change, and so you heard it here that OMAC is a 501c3 organization, and therefore, if you so feel the need, please do support this organization through your participation, through your funds, through your love and your prayers.
Yes.
So, well, you know what? There's another element of you. So you're a performer. Do you want to leave us with anything? Do you have a message through the arts that you'd like to share with us?
Of course. So when I was younger, you know, my mom was a singer. My stepdaddy was the bass player. We had bands playing in our living room. I mean, when I tell you, my brother's Uncle Paul, may he rest in peace, Gwen, everybody. I mean, I was just exposed to music at a young age. My uncles were producers. And then my brother was like a superstar in the neighborhood, him and my homie Cooley G. It was them, Jimmy Jilla and Cooley G. So we used to just rap all the time. I remember writing my first rap, and it was on the tape. You don't remember those cassette tapes?
I remember.
Yeah, so, and then I got into the gangster rapping, you know. Of course, N.W.A. introduced us to that. And I started getting into the gangster raps. And but, you know, we wrote about what we lived. We wrote about what we saw in the community. So
that's fair.
Yeah, and that's what steered me to that. But once I started changing, I realized that I don't want to be, you know, although I respect the art, no matter what you're doing out there, I don't knock nobody for what they're doing. I just woke up one day and said, you know what? Every rhyme that I write from now on is going to be kid friendly. It's going to be radio ready. And I'm going to talk about everything that I went through. So I am on YouTube at Giving Every Opportunity. That's my YouTube page. We are teaching our kids how to be artists and without using the glorification of killing and violence and drugs and stuff like that. So we're showing them they can be different artists. But if you want me to give you a couple bars, I can do that.
I want some bars. Okay. All right.
So, all right. I made it out. So I made it out that street life. Yeah, you know I had to get right. I gave it to God. I took a stand. I had to. I'm a real man. Walk with me. Let's chop it up. Hustle hard, but don't rock it up. I lost a lot, but I chalked it up. Bottom line, I rose up from poverty and jail cells. Food stamps and thrift stores, giving back to the world. That's what I live for. It took a lot to get where I'm at. This is why I'm giving back. I had a rough start, off track, stayed strong, and I bounced back. It's a cold world that we living in. Street life, fake friends. If I didn't change, I probably would be a tragedy, like Pac and them. That's real talk. Take heed. Street life, full of greed. My 9-to-5 and my family. On the real, that's all I need. Grab this, don't hesitate. My mission is to motivate. OMAC, participate. Some love, many hate. But it's all good. Understand, I made it on out and became a man. I made it out.
Hey.
Yeah.
That's Gerald G.O. Gibson.
Bars, bars.
OMAC, people, yeah. Operation.
I ain't going to never stop rapping.
Change. Oh, no.
Until my casket drops.
You shouldn't. In fact, guess what? Yeah. I actually come to some community events just to see you.
Yeah,
you didn't know that, but you have, like, closets, fans.
Well, thank you for all the fans. I appreciate you.
No, you have outright fans.
Yes.
So this has been wonderful. Thank
yes,
you
has.
So very much for joining the Ricochet Effect.
Well, I have something for you.
Thank you.
So it's you know, I work with my organization, PAL, Police Activities League.
Yes.
And they are celebrating 40 years of PAL.
Thank you, PAL.
And we just got our coins made. And I was told to give these to special people. You saw me give one to Cozart. Shout out to David Cozart. But I brought one for you as well, because the work that you do is not going unnoticed. And I want you to have this coin. PAL, again, is celebrating 40 years. There's a lot coming up in a couple months that PAL is going to be doing. So we'll keep everybody in tune. But shout out to PAL.
Yes, PAL. You see them mm-hmm. at the various community events. These are the police. This is the Police Activities League.
Yes.
They're really beautiful.
Communications between community and law enforcement. Yes, PAL's been around for many years. You had Muhammad Ali was a PAL kid, Joe Frazier, Alicia Keys, Paul Pierce, Tony Danza. There was a lot of
that's
celebrities
amazing.
That's been PAL is around, is nationwide. Well, it's actually international.
That's what it takes. So, you know, again, it takes a village to raise a community.
It does. It does.
So thank you so very much for being with us. And
thank you for having me. Thank you.
Of course. We have come to another amazing end to the Ricochet Effect podcast for today. And I want to leave you with a bit of poetry. This is poetry that I wrote, and
okay.
though I'm not a spoken word artist, I do love to write poetry. This is my art. And so, to Mr. Gerald G.O. Gibson, I feel you on so many levels. So I call this one, They Are Born Innocent. An unjust education is a means for capitalism instead of liberation. Whereas the educational complex is a social dilemma to perpetuate mainstream psychological chains of slavery that bind young generations and prophetically tells of their self-destruction. It's a socialization process that produces mediocrity that makes me want to holler. I have watched youth who can't control their loins, who then become parents too young. They are caught in an endless cyclical parade of alcoholism, drug addiction, and reliance on welfare. It's if they can't wake up because they're in deep, binding sleep, in a state of paralysis, watching media to sedate lost dreams and rotting visions. Educated or not, this slumber state is a definite path for self-destruction. The miseducation has been too long, too deep, too ingrained. Not Du Bois, Douglas, or Sister Soldier can save you now. The perceived American dream is kryptonite and has hold. It wasn't your fault. You were born into a world that's wavering and cold. How does one uncloak the shell to see brighter days? The answer is in the soul that speaks from before Africans were sold. They are born innocent.
Mm.
Wow.
Definitely.
So.
Black history.
Good people, thank you so much for listening to The Ricochet Effect. I'm Dr. Abini El-Amin, and it's been our pleasure.
It's the Ricochet Effect. Ricochet Effect.